Welcome to Deep Talk, the podcast for advanced English learners who are looking to explore something a little bit deeper. Hello and welcome to episode 25 of Deep Talk. It is our first birthday! Or rather, it was our first birthday 2 weeks ago and I completely forgot. So I should have put this celebration at the beginning of episode 24, but the whole thing completely passed me by. But we are one. On March the 2nd, 2022, the first episode of Deep Talk was released. That incredible conversation with Deepika about accent reduction services and why they are yucky yucky. Followed really swiftly by episodes 2 and 3 about how COVID changed our relationship with death, that was my chat with Andrew, and about how to identify coercive control with Bistra. I mean, we started with a bang, didn't we? And it's been consistently phenomenal since then. My guests have shared experiences and knowledge on professional burnout, witches, procrastination, food poverty, the meaning of life, our interpretations of history, LGBT rights in both Eastern Europe and the US, the human tendency to regret, and the current state of feminism, among a whole bunch of other things. It has been a delight connecting with my guests, both old friends and complete strangers from Tintinet, talking about something really juicy and deep and close to their hearts. And of course, it's been a pleasure connecting with you, the listeners. Your emails, comments, and DMs have been incredible. And to those of you who have even decided to jump in further and join the Deep Talker community, hello, and I love you most of all. And if you want to join, we have our next call on Wednesday, the 22nd of March. Join the Patreon today and you will be welcome in. Since launching the podcast a year and 2 weeks ago, it's racked up 29,000 plays. We've developed an average weekly audience of around 600 people, and over 2,500 of you are subscribers on Spotify. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I am so happy that this podcast has connected with you and filled up a little space in your lives. So with all that gushing out of the way, what have we got for episode 25? Today I'm joined by Marcella, an art therapist and lecturer in art psychotherapy who's based in Edinburgh. She works with children, young people and their families in her practice, as well as helping train a new generation of therapists on the only current art therapy programme in Scotland. In our conversation, she explains what art therapy is and how it relates to other creative therapies, why it's such a powerful tool for helping children, and also generously gives us an insight into what her sessions with clients look like. It is a beautiful conversation and my honour to share it with you now. So here we go with episode 25. Our guest this week is Marcella, an art therapist and a lecturer on the only art therapy programme in Scotland. Hello Marcella. First of all, welcome to Deep Talk. Thank you so much for agreeing to spend your time with us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Rihanna.
To get us started, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is that you do?
Yes, of course. Well, you mentioned really well, I'm an art therapist. My first degree is in psychology, and I have worked practically all my professional life with children and families. So I will say that I'm quite, you know, very keen, passionate, but also specialized in that area of working. What can I else can say about? Well, art therapy is a really well-established profession in the UK, but is relatively new for the rest of the world. So another interest of mine is kind of bringing more thoughts and development to other countries, like, for example, in Spain and also Latin America, with collaborations that can be done whenever we have a chance.
That's amazing. So what made you, you said your first degree was in psychology, what made you specialize in art therapy?
It's a really good question. I am originally from Mexico. And back then, when I finished my degree, I was working with the street children in Guadalajara, which is the second largest city in Mexico. And you can imagine when we talk about children traumatized, you know, this is way far and beyond. And for some reason, these children and young people responded really well to creative elements, you know, when something was introduced in a different way rather than just sitting with them and talking or asking questions. And I have always been really interested in creativity in general as our human kind of capacity. Mm-hmm. And I'm also have always been really interested about psychoanalytic theories, you know, especially thinking about the unconscious processes and, you know, the mind as opposed to the body. And I thought that there must be a way to combine the things that I really like the most. And I found a training in our, first of all, I found the existence of our psychotherapy and the training, especially in America, in the United States, in Canada, and in Europe. So I decided to specialize in this profession.
Wow, amazing. And just to help listeners perhaps imagine a bit clearer what it is that you do, a very, very typical session, and perhaps a typical session doesn't exist, but what does art therapy look like in practice?
Okay. Well, the first thing that I would like to say is that art therapy is not only one. It's a many, you know, like maybe like a diverse way of practicing. Mm-hmm. For example, the art therapy that I believe and I practice might differ from the art therapy that my colleagues in Europe and mm-hmm. Latin America are practicing, because, you know, one thing is that we're really influenced by the context of working. But just a typical session in the UK, here in Scotland. I have to offer a safe space to my client, my young clients. And in my room, I will have different materials, art materials, different kind of, you know, options for them to explore and maybe kind of use. But because I work with children and young people, play is also an interesting part. Mm-hmm. So I will also use a bit of some kind of little elements of playing. I have a particular like for these kind of little figures that we call it a small world figures. If you go to McDonald's, these kind of little figures they offer to children in the Happy Meal.
Okay.
Something like that, you know. And I'm also really fan of also kind of offering a baby doll, because, you know, the first thing that comes in the therapeutic sessions with children is this all this element of nurture. And it's important to kind of provide that kind of media. Mm-hmm. And then my clients will choose whatever they would like to use and to play. Sometimes in the first sessions, establishing trust and safety as the main elements for work might take a while, depending on how much, you know, adversity these young people have experienced. Mm-hmm. It might take a lot, and it will be my job then to help them to use the materials and to find a way.
Amazing. And I guess it perhaps depends on age, but do the children who you work with, like when they walk into that room, do they think they're having an arts and crafts afternoon? Do they know that it's therapy? Like, how aware are they of what's going on?
Oh, yes, but it's a really good question. I will say that in general, I mean, it is really important to emphasize in the beginning what is the purpose for them to be in that room. I used to work in schools previously to the job that I'm doing right now. And we used to have like a dedicated room for this type of work. Mm-hmm. And I will say that with these new generations, young people are more aware to the importance. There is something called mental health. Maybe they are not able to kind of articulate it with these terms, but, you know, to think about feelings, to think about safety, which is really important, and to think about the importance of talking or expressing and maybe finding a way or help if they can. And this is something that is kind of embedded in the curriculum, which is, you know, really mm-hmm. helpful. And therefore, I mean, what I always say to young people is we're here because we're going to be thinking about your thoughts, making pictures and playing. And, you know, with this little message, they get it really well in a way that, you know, we know and it's really evident that we're there to do our mean business, you know, very seriously about whatever is happening in the room. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned safety there and the video that you've shared, and I encourage mm-hmm. listeners to watch it. It's a 57-minute interview, and Marcella, when she messaged me, said, you know, we can just focus on the first 15, 20 minutes. Like, don't worry. And I watched the whole thing. It was fascinating. It was a really, really interesting conversation. And the speaker, Graham Music, is a really dynamic speaker, mm-hmm. so you want to listen to him. Mm-hmm. It was really interesting. But he talked, he interestingly used the word safeness, which isn't a standard form of that word. Usually we would say safety, but he used safeness as what I took from his point towards the beginning of the interview was that play both kind of encourages safety, that feeling of safety and all of the kind of connection that, but also you cannot play without safety. And so perhaps from a diagnostic perspective, and feel free to correct me, if a child is not able to play, that tells you a lot about where they are.
Absolutely, Rihanna. You can see children, they are coming to the therapy room traumatized, you know, because unfortunately adversity is part of our lives in a much or less degree. And you can see children, they are severely traumatized, started, you know, in a state of hyper alert, if you like. And the first thing they will do is to respond to that, you know, be in a room with an adult that they don't know who they are. What do they want? You know, what do you want from me? Kind of, you know, question. They will either hide, or maybe they will, we say commonly, they will kick off.
So bad behavior. And I didn't use air quotes, but I will use air quotes now. Bad behavior, so to speak. In your experience, does that often come from some kind of lack of safety or lack of nurture or lack of...
I think it's a good indicator that something is or has been wrong, really wrong for a young person to display this kind of behavior.
And how would you distinguish? Because I'm sure, I know that I've got listeners who have children, and every child I'm sure has like a tantrum or a bad day or whatever. How would you distinguish between a perfectly healthy child having a bad day and, I mean, is it purely the frequency of these outbursts? Would that be a big indicator for you?
I think it will be really a really good indicator, the frequency, you know, the intensity, also the age of the child. For example, if we have a child that is 2 years, 3 years old, throwing a tantrum is normal, you know, and maybe the emotional regulation that is expected is not there yet. So, you know, parents will need, or caterers will need to be more hands-on. But, you know, if we're talking about that 10 or 11 years old, you know, displaying the same amount of distress and with a lot of intensity, no signs of regulation whatsoever, then we need to be really concerned about what is going on.
So you've talked about art therapy and play therapy. What is it, and perhaps you could tell us some other sort of alternative forms of therapy, what is it about these kind of looking at the situation sideways that allows you to work so effectively with children?
Well, this is my opinion, and I'm an absolute kind of defender of the element that, you know, children will naturally play. It's something they will do as part of their nature. But also they will express themselves. You know, there is always like a stage where children will make pictures. And this is where art therapy comes from. But also in the play, they kind of express themselves. And maybe we can think more about a drama, movement kind of inclination. And making music is another one. And of course, I mean, yes, music therapy, play therapy, drama therapy, dance movement. These are the kind of, you know, the what we call it, the creative arts therapies.
Okay, that's the term, not alternative.
Arts creative therapies. Arts therapies.
Yeah, one of the women in the, like, asking the questions in the interview, I think she said she was uses theatre and drama. And she even did like sword fighting and stuff with her with her clients to help them work through whatever it is that they were working through. It sounds really exciting. And I guess I'm interested, obviously you work within a Scottish context, so you won't necessarily be able to talk for beyond that. But how is it that children access this if they need it? What's the process? How do you know when a child needs that extra support, and then do enough children get it?
Well, I feel that the schools are a really good starting point to kind of pick up things they are concerning for parents, caterers, and other professionals, general practitioners, nurses. And I guess the moment that we're living, we have put a lot of emphasis, particularly in the end of primary year and, you know, beginning of secondary school and moving to high school, mm-hmm. as the kind of main points where mental health should be provided. Mm. But I like to emphasize the importance of starting way before, you know, way before, when the nurture is happening, when the bond with the parents or carers is being formed. Mm. Because this is, you know, maybe, you know, that kind of work that I'm doing right now is also kind of promoting mental health in nurseries, if you like.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Yeah.
And what do you think of the people that you meet through your work? Mm-hmm. What do you think of the training that mm-hmm. teachers and nursery workers, like, mm-hmm. what do you think of their training? How knowledgeable are they? Is it enough?
Well, I believe that there is a lot of information available for them. For example, I was quite surprised when I was working in schools to see how much training they receive in terms of attachment, in terms of resilience. They kind of know the main points, if you like. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel that the issue, and I'm mentioning this with a lot of respect for my school colleagues mm-hmm. and other professionals, you know, teachers, staff, you know, learning assistants and all of them, is that the schools, as Graham Music was saying, they focus, you know, the main focus is kind of achievement. Yeah. And it's not the schools in itself as a setting, but the kind of, you know, what they receive from the system as a whole. You know, we are really good as, you know, aiming to achieve something, yeah. excellence, you know, what we call it, curriculum for excellence. And, you know, I wonder what it means. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we need to kind of switch off and just go back to the nature, you know, the basic principles of, you know, the relationship between child and adult. And what Graham Music was emphasizing, the importance of reciprocity, the importance of curiosity, the importance of establishing safety, whatever we would like to call it.
Yeah. Yeah, because that seemed to be something he came back to a lot, and the mm-hmm. role of play in that. I mean, could you tell us, just dive in a little bit more about, when you say play, what is it that mm-hmm. you mean within the context of a creative art therapist?
Oh, wow. Okay. Maybe the capacity, first of all, it's a really big question. It's many things, I feel. And then you kind of, you know, you pointed the right thing. For children and young people that I see in my therapeutic practice is, first of all, the capacity to connect with themselves, but also to connect with the other, in this case, myself, me, Marcela, as the therapist. Mm. What we offer is what we call it, professionally speaking, a potential space where anything can happen, right? Okay. And young people can go far and beyond. And I have an example of this, you know, and maybe you have read Peter Pan, you know, the book from Barry. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there is a little kind of vignette when it was explained to Wendy, you know, by Peter, how the fairies were born, and say that, you know, when the laughter of the first baby, you know, it kind of erupted from the silence, you know, it was like 1,000 pieces of light scatter all about. And that's what happens, you know, connecting with the magic of the possibility of, you know, I have seen children playing, and I'm going to put you an example of these that is just magical. You offer a box of things, and children will use them in the way they need to use them, but also kind of, you know, accessing a space in their minds that is really magical. Mm-hmm. A child saw a little kind of lanyard that looks like a teacher's badge, mm-hmm. you know, these kind of the things that the teachers use to kind of access, you know, doors and all of that.
Yeah.
And this child saw it and say, oh, we're going to play teachers now, you know, out of nothing, you know, it could be nothing, it could be just like a piece of, you know, elastic or whatever. Yeah. But he decided to enter that space, and it was wonderful.
And do you think it takes a certain, I don't know, like a type of adult who can kind of enter that space as well? Because I don't consider myself somebody who's good with children. And for me, it is a lot of that, like, I don't know where they're going. And I can't follow them. Yeah. Is that something that you, like, was that something that came naturally to you and your colleagues? Is it something you learn?
Yeah, well, both. I feel that it's important. Yes, Rihanna, you know, for example, I couldn't see myself working with, I don't know, you know, I have colleagues who work in forensic prisons. I couldn't do that. you know, right. that I have a natural kind of instinct for using, you know, this is what we call it, professionally speaking, working with a metaphor and go okay. there. And, you know, maybe because I have a Mexican background and we use a lot what we call like magical thinking mm. in our, you know, our language, and it's embedded in the culture everywhere. So I guess that I am more kind of prompt to jump from one space to the other. But also I will have to say that, you know, it's something really important to mention. I didn't want to work with children when I trained, you know, immediately.
Okay.
And, you know, as everyone, I also come with my own material. So not until I started to delve into my own child in mind, I was able to really contact, you know, myself in that way and put myself in that position. I will say that people who work with children and young people or people who need to play, they don't need to be playful, you know, like joking and mm-hmm. you know, like being the joker of the group or anything like that. But you need to kind of follow them and you know, to play with them and understand that, you know, that these little figures are, you know, an entire universe and you help them to construct that.
Mm. And how, when you're in that space, is there a difficulty in like also being the therapist? Do you mm-hmm. do you ever sort of get lost in the game and fight on perhaps earlier in your career, get lost in the game and kind of go, oh crap, I'm supposed to be working?
Well, this is the space where it is really important to have a regular supervision with somebody who is more kind of, say, maybe experienced or is in a different kind of position, you know, mm-hmm. organizationally speaking, who help you to identify your the do's and the don'ts. I have never been in that place, and it's really important, and as part of the training, to always keep, you know, to be there in, but keep mm-hmm. one eye out and be thinking. It's like a capacity that we need mm-hmm. to learn, you know, how to play, but also to keep that space in mind to understand what is going on. I'm not, mm-hmm. you know, just to put you an example, imagine that you're playing with a child and you're supposed to be Batman. I'm not only Batman here, I'm also Marcella, and I'm here and I'm the therapist.
I mean, I'm sure there are no kind of normal situations, but when you're perhaps meeting a child you've never met before, it's the first mm-hmm. couple of sessions, you'll obviously, I imagine, have case notes and, mm-hmm. you know, comments from the teachers or the mm-hmm. nurses or whatever that have passed them on to you. But what is it that you're looking for? What's your kind of, mm-hmm. what signs are you looking out for?
Hmm. Well, I think one of the most important things is to kind of observe how the child is in the room, mm-hmm. How the child is using the elements they are provided, you know, how much understanding for the boundaries exist, or maybe mm-hmm. kind of, you know, touching the boundaries or not understanding who you are and, you know, kind of frame that piece of work. Maybe the capacity to play also, mm-hmm. the capacity to use, in this case, the art materials. You know, can we make a picture out of this, or maybe we need to start from there and build up to see how much we can construct together. Mm-hmm. It is really important for me also to work with the family, with the parents or caterers, and see right. how much, you know, kind of how is the kind of family constellation or the family structure. Mm-hmm. Sometimes young people are the kind of, you know, maybe the ones they are carrying the problem for a whole system that is more complex. Mm. And we need to think about that. Mm. How much, you know, also, you know, how much the parents can engage, you know, really to kind of build up that, you know, because in my opinion, children have less resistance or defenses to mm-hmm. receive the support. However, you know, maybe adults, we are more kind of, you know, in the mood of, no, maybe change is something dangerous and I'm scared of that and not willing to go to that path. Mm-hmm. And in a way, this is something that I see a lot, you know, adults in general who they might wish to provide something really positive for the young person, but also kind of thinking and wishing, fix the child. And I cannot fix children. I cannot. This is something that is not in my power or intention.
What do you tell parents or carers that you can do if they yeah. say, make him better, make her better? Mm-hmm. What is your job as you see it?
Well, I guess it's taking the slow route of understanding, you know, mm-hmm. why are you here? And thinking about also the expectations for the space. And, you know, thinking also relationally speaking, how is this affecting you? How much of these are you receiving, and how much of these we can think together? Because, you know, this is an important part of the work.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I mean, I'm aware of the time, and I don't want to take up too much of your time. I'm curious, because when we first met, you were, I think, full-time as an art therapist, and mm-hmm. then started working as a lecturer as well. You're working at Queen Margaret University and also mm-hmm. guest lecturing at Brunel, I think. What's next for you? Like, what is most perhaps interesting? I don't know if you're researching. I don't know if there's something you are curious about and want to learn more about.
Yes, well, at the moment, I'm also something that I forgot to mention is that mm-hmm. I'm conducting a study in child and infant observation.
Okay.
And I'm very, very, well, kind of curious, but also really passionate about and focusing more in children's development, particularly in the early years.
Mm.
And, you know, I would like, this will be my ideal, you know, that I could kind of combine the work with children with my work as a lecturer
mm-hmm.
and kind of bring this both together. Yeah. And I mean, to me, it's an honor to work with the students because, you know, how much, you know, how can I say, you know, to kind of have this role as supporting other new professionals to take up, you know, to take up the kind of, you know, the lead mm-hmm. in bringing more attention to children's mental health from the arts psychotherapeutic perspective.
Mm-hmm. And have you noticed, like, since you began your training and where you are now,
mm-hmm.
have you noticed, I mean, has there been a lot of development in our understanding of children and our understanding of how to kind of best help them?
Yes and no, Rihanna, because I feel that there is a lot of emphasis these days about, you know, what we call it evidence-based practice, which is really good, you know, to prove that professions actually work.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, this could also be like a result of the system to be completely kind of overwhelmed and, you know, how the budget works in general for different kind of, you know, professions, the health system, education, and so on. And I think it's really important to remember that I'm talking about the children, they are coming to our practices. What they need is patience.
Mm.
They don't need the fix, the quick fix. And for, you know, when we see that, especially children's mental health is awfully overwhelmed right now.
Right.
There is a huge waiting list for children to access a specialist at the moment, not only in Scotland, but I will say in the rest of the UK and in the world.
Mm.
And, you know, there is no quick fix. And right. we need to think about that. And we need to be patient, and we need to focus our research and development in other areas that kind of emphasize the importance of, you know, service users to be really supported.
Thank you so much for that, Marcella. It's been such a pleasure to speak to you today.
Thank you so much, Rihanna, for inviting me. It has been a real pleasure to you.
My thanks once again to Marcella for taking the time out of her day to talk with us and share her experience and expertise. If you found the conversation interesting, please let me know. I'm open to all flattering and complimentary correspondence on the podcast. You can find ways to get in touch in the episode description. And we'll be talking about this podcast episode in our next Deep Talkers meetup, which takes place, as this episode is released, next Wednesday, so the 22nd of March 2023. As soon as you sign up on the Patreon, you'll be able to join us. That's all from me now. I'll see you again in 2 weeks. I've been Rhiannon. This has been Deep Talk. Have a wonderful day.